Good Monday, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Keyser with you. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your day and to your week. The weekend flew by. Man, hate it when that happens. But a lot to get into today. We'll kind of do a deep dive into some questions for the Titans, you know, as now they have 5 weeks off before training camp. Gives us a lot of time to kind of dissect things. We'll talk a little Predators as well. Tennessee baseball in action today to try and stay alive in the College World Series. But watch a little bit of the U.S. Open this weekend, Michelle. And, you know, I kind of thought maybe this was finally going to be it for Ricky Fowler. He was going to finally win a major. And once again, doesn't happen. He shoots a 5-over yesterday, blows the lead, and Wyndham Clark wins his first major and wins the U.S. Open. What a name. That's a great name for a golfer. But you were kind of experiencing all of this from a different point of view because you got a last-second trip to Vegas.
This was the most wild weekend
ever. It's always wild in Vegas.
Well, I mean, yeah, no pun intended.
Did you give Carlson shots before he did his speech?
Driving to New Orleans, our frequent texter Ryan from Chicago now lives in New Orleans. So I was taking a trip down there this weekend, and then all of a sudden I get a text from our very own Superbook Sports, and they said, "Hey, I know this is last minute, but do you want to come to Vegas?"
Yeah, so, I looked through my text messages. I must have missed it. Must have missed mine, but no, I'm just kidding. But
yeah, so it was a Nashville, New Orleans, Vegas, then Vegas, New Orleans, Nashville weekend. Very long, but also quick, wild weekend. So,
was that your first time in Vegas?
No, I've been to Vegas before. I actually went pre-COVID. It was my first time to the Sportsbook, which was really cool to see.
To Superbook?
Yeah. So, wild. The parade environment for the Vegas Golden Knights was absolutely insane. The amount of people on the strip, in the plaza, I mean, there were a couple times we went up to the parking garages just to look at the overview of the amount of people that were out there. And at one point I was kind of in the middle, you know, as the night went on and as the parade went on. One of those moments where you kind of just look around and you're like, wow, the amount of people around me right now, like, this is terrifying, and I'm very claustrophobic, but also absolutely insane at the amount of people who showed up for that parade. Saturday night on the strip, I mean, you know what you're going to get from that. So pretty cool experience. But yeah, back at it at 6 a.m. this morning. I beat Rex Road, and Rex Road took the day off for Bonnaroo. Mr. Bonnaroo.
I know. Well, you know.
We'll see him tomorrow. See how he's
older.
Feeling.
How
he's feeling.
It takes him longer to recover. So, you know, that's okay. It looked like a great scene from Vegas, from their parade. And, like, I know the plaza you're talking about right there by T-Mobile Arena. It's, you know, a very cool setup that they have. And I went a few years ago to a Predators Golden Knights game, and the atmosphere is awesome. I can only imagine what it was like celebrating the Stanley Cup. But, it definitely, William Karlsson stole the show.
I know.
I mean, like, when I saw the video of him and he's like, "This guy," I'm like, "Oh boy."
Then his shirt is just off.
He's shirtless. He's drunk off as you know what, and
wish we could play the audio, but go check on social media.
Oh no, it's fantastic. Now you raise an interesting question on your social media accounts of who pulled the mic away. Was it somebody from PR? Was it his girlfriend or wife? Like, you know, I'm gonna say PR, kind of the way she was conducting herself. It felt like she was either an NHL or a team employee. But I mean, here's the thing. She said, "You're done," but she never tried to grab the mic. So it was just kind of like you kind of let him go for a second.
Well, and you know, the fans were loving it. I mean, that's just, it's amazing.
He's drinking out of the cup, which is fantastic.
At the same time, I saw the video and in my head I'm thinking, which would be worse? A wife / girlfriend or fiance or a PR person. But Robbie Stanley this morning said that I think his wife is blonde. So I think it probably was a PR or team employee.
Yeah, I don't think the wife or girlfriend would try and pull the mic away, because, I mean, she's probably going to be just as inebriated as he was.
But yeah, I mean, I'm happy that they allowed him to go for so long. And I agree, Chase. when he said this guy, and this when he guy. Fell, I don't know if you saw the video of him falling. That was when the shirt was on. But needless to say, you deserved it. They'd probably been drinking for days straight, considering usually the parade is like quickly after. I mean, they had a couple days in between winning it and then Saturday night on the strip. Did not disappoint for them.
If I won a championship as a player, and especially the first one, I mean, it would be a 3 or 4 day bender. I mean, like, I don't think I'd be sober for 3 days.
Well, and they... So did they win on Wednesday or was that Thursday of last week?
I can't even... it was Wednesday.
So Wednesday. So you probably drink all
NBA
night after.
Was,
that was Tuesday, right? Or Monday.
So it might have been Tuesday they won. Yeah.
So Wednesday, right? So you probably drink all night then Thursday you're still celebrating, and then it's Friday night, you're probably still celebrating, and then the parade's on Saturday. So I mean, these guys have probably, it's probably been like a 5 day, 6 day straight bender.
Oh yeah. I've asked guys that have won it before, like, do you get to a point where you're just kind of like, okay, I gotta stop, and they're like, yes.
I need to sleep. I need to sleep.
Usually somebody's telling you it's time to like go to bed.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about especially the NHL season and how hard it is to win a Stanley Cup, right? I mean, 82 games.
Yeah, I mean, these guys
and
got
the
beat
postseason, right? Half the guys out there playing with something broken on their body towards the end of the playoffs, and then you know you win it in five. I mean, they're probably like, my body's falling apart, and then they just drink for 5 days, and then they're like, okay, wow, I need a full off season to recover now. But, yeah, congratulations to them. The fans were awesome there. 6 years, very quick, win their first cup.
Yeah, I know, which is fantastic. I mean, that's what Bill Foley, the majority owner, wanted. He said, you know, cup playoffs in three, cup in six. And then when they made the playoffs in the Stanley Cup final the first year, I think he changed that.
He switched it a little, cup in one.
But they ended up getting cup in six. And, you know, what does that mean now for the rest of the NHL? We'll just discuss that as we go along. But I did want to kind of ask this, and we'll have Jonathan Hutton at 10:30 to get into a lot of Titans in the second hour. Ryan Preece, driver of the number 41, will be racing this weekend at the Nashville Super Speedway. He'll join us at 9:30. But Wyndham Clark winning the U.S. Open, I think, obviously happy for him to get that win. But Ricky Fowler, I mean, just one of those guys that seems to be snake bit when it comes to a major. And now I was trying to think of teams or individuals that it just, for whatever reason, they get close, they just can't win the big one.
You know what comes to mind right away? Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And he was just a part of the Bradley Beal trade. And I saw that he was on Good Morning America this morning. But he's a player who always seems to get right there, but not quite. I mean, one of the biggest ones, Charles Barkley. I mean, he still gets teased about not having a championship. But I think that's a good question, and maybe it's a text line question for our listeners. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHonda.com. A player or team who seems to just get so close but not quite get there. I mean, I think Chris Paul, as far as playing right now, is definitely top on the list. Jokic, people were talking about him, but I remember in the offseason – before this year, and it was like, if he wins the MVP again, like, he's not going to have a championship. Can he get it done? Obviously, he gets his championship, so that will no longer be held over his head. But yeah, I mean, I think Chris Paul is probably top of the list of that.
I think top of the list for me would probably be Dan Marino.
Oh, that's a good one. Yep, that's a good one.
You know, they got close, you know, a couple times, but really just could never get back there and was on some teams that just weren't good enough. In honor of NASCAR coming here this weekend, Mark Martin finished runner-up in the championship 5 times in his career. You know, he was one that could just never get over the hump to win it. And it's not just a championship, but you know, Daytona 500 for him was another one. But I'd be curious of people's answers. 615-737-1025, our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You know? Unfortunately, if I'm looking at it from a front office point of view, I mean, David Poyle might be in that category of somebody that, you know, he got there one time. I can't remember if Washington ever got there, but got to the Stanley Cup final with the Predators and unfortunately not able to break through. in just a few more weeks as the general manager of the Nashville Predators before he officially hands the reins over to Barry Trotz.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, David.
If they do, you know, get there in this second reign of Barry Trotz, and you know that's the hope, of course, right? Winning the championship is the ultimate goal. That he will be an advisor and get you know, time with the cup or, you know, be a part of it. But yeah, I mean, you're right. Not as a general manager. I mean, that's huge. And the unfortunate truth is you can be so incredibly successful. I mean, how many times do we bring up that he's the most winningest GM in the NHL, but championships are always that little asterisk next to you. They won a championship. I mean, that is always such a, like, notch on your belt, I guess you could say.
Got some good ones. Glenn from Laverne, who apparently was in Vegas too.
Hey, Glenn. Didn't run into you, though.
Asked if we put a silver alert out for Rex Road yet.
He's fine.
Matthew from Jolton. Allen Iverson, that's a good one.
Who you just saw the other day. Yep. I was just about to say him, too.
David says Charles Barkley.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that's a good one. Robbie Stanley texts me, and then Will from Nashville. They both say Jim Kelly. Four straight Super Bowls with no wins. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, that's – you're so close, but not quite there.
Yeah, that's – those are good. So keep those coming throughout the show, 615.
Tracy McGrady?
I
don't think he ever won one.
I don't think he did either. That's a good one.
Yeah.
If that's right. I need to look that up, but I think
yeah, I don't think he ever did win one.
615-737-1025. Great players that came very close to winning it all but couldn't quite win the big one. 615-737-1025, our question of the day throughout the show, and you can weigh in on that. Coming up next, Michelle was celebrating the Stanley Cup with the Vegas Golden Knights, covering them for Superbook Sports. And so it raised the question for me, how close are we to seeing that on Broadway for the Nashville Predators? What's in store for the NHL as the draft is a little over a week away? We'll discuss that next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Chase McKay, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Kieser with you. Question of the day. Big-time players that couldn't quite get over the hump to win the big one. A lot of the NBA. We're getting a lot of NBA answers. Karl Malone, John Stockton. Yeah, those are good.
Those are good. I just said Patrick Ewing.
Matthew from Jolton says Dale Earnhardt Jr. Yeah, I mean, that's true. He won two Daytona 500s, but never won a championship. So that's true. David's asking Steve McNair, Eddie George, do you put them in that category? I mean, I don't think they're the same level as like a Jim Kelly or a Dan Marino, but certainly worthy of consideration.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, by David bringing up them, I think of Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Derrick Henry, he's still in his.
He could certainly be in that discussion, you know, at the end of his career, depending on
how
it goes.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, depending on how he finishes it. But he very well could be somebody. I mentioned Barry Bonds.
Barry Bonds is a good one. Tony Gwynn, Stacy on my Twitter account, Chase on Game, said Tony Gwynn.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. So keep them coming. That's our question of the day. We'll get back to that. As we go along throughout the show, great players to never get over the hump. And I mean, in some situations, like NASCAR, for instance, you know, I would say even winning like the Daytona 500, Indy 500 things. Mm-hmm.
Those are so big that
you could put that. It doesn't always have to be a championship, but for most sport, you know, it would. Super Bowl, NBA Final, Stanley Cup. I'm trying to think of one that really stands out in Stanley Cup. Was Paul Kariya on the team that won the cup for the Ducks? No? So Paul Kariya could be one.
Mm-hmm.
If that's right. Yeah. So we'll keep that going as we go along. But the NHL, the question now, with Vegas winning the Stanley Cup, what does that mean for not only them moving forward? Because, again, they did it in 6 years. But also, what does that mean for the rest of the NHL? I am curious of how Vegas is kind of looked at now. Are they looked at, you know, as a legitimate contender, perennial contender, or are there still going to be those people that are like, well, they just bought it. Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet was on Caroline Willie and D-Mace last week for his weekly visit and kind of gave his thoughts on the league perception of the Vegas Golden Knights.
Derek, I'll be honest with you. Most people I know hate it. They really do hate it. I remember they made the Stanley Cup final in their first season. They lost to Washington. And I remember back then people saying it's so embarrassing for the NHL that an expansion team would make the Stanley Cup final. And, I'll be honest, I don't think like that. If you're put into a league, your job is to win. And your fans want you to win, and that's it. And their owner, when he got the team, he predicted, we're going to win the Stanley Cup within 6 years. Now, I don't know if he honestly believed it, but he turned out to be right. And I think that brash and bold nature has gone through that entire organization. And they've made big moves. Like, one of the things you talked about there, Derek, I should have mentioned this before, is that, Vegas winning, what's it going to do? And I think one of the things about Vegas winning is they made a lot of tough decisions and they made a lot of bold moves. I've told this story before. When they signed Alex Pietrangelo as a free agent 2 years ago, I think the free agent day was a Monday. And before the weekend, everybody knew there was a good chance Pietrangelo was going to end up there. And I've never had a crazier weekend of players and agents just texting me, what's Vegas going to do to make this fit? And because people knew that Vegas would make it fit, whatever they had to do, they would make it work. And, sometimes that's criticism because, people's lives get affected. But in the world of sports, and Derek, you played in the ultimate tough league for player moves, the NFL. That's business. That's sports. It happens sometimes.
That's Elliot Friedman from the other day kind of talking about that. So I think that perception is probably going to continue. Vegas mm-hmm. is going to be looked at as kind of the bad guys of the NHL. And, that is what it is. But I think they've kind of set a standard for what an expansion team needs to do. and that's the new standard. You pay a lot of money, you deserve that. So that's kind of where they're at. But now the rest of the league, that's who they're chasing, is the defending champions. Can Colorado get healthy and get back into that contention? I would say yes. I mean, they still have some things they need to do. But, as it relates here, the Predators are in a really good position because of all the draft picks and all of the cap space that they have. So, I would expect this week could be an active week for the league leading up to the draft. You could see some trades hard to believe the NHL will be in our city a week from today for the awards and then the draft during the week.
Yeah, I mean, Vegas had their parade and now turn around and begin the offseason, and now the draft is in our backyard. Like you said, Chase, the Predators are going in with the most draft capital. They've got 13 picks. They got 2 picks in the first round, and then they got 11 in the rest of the rounds. So, the Predators are sitting in a really interesting position. I agree with you, though. I think it will be, a pretty active week. We talk about, are there guys out there that they want to try to get something done maybe before the draft, package trades to go and get maybe an established guy. We've talked about an Alex DeBrincat and things like that. So what could or would the Predators be open to before the draft comes here?
Sorry, Nick was talking to me.
Oh, no, no worries, no worries. But I think that is probably going to be my biggest question heading into, I guess, this week and really up until the draft finishes up here in Nashville is, are the Predators going to, they could do both of these things that I'm about to say. Are they going to, package some draft capital and really try to make a push to get up in that top 10 range or top 8, top 6, right? I mean, I know we've mentioned the third overall pick a couple of times. Are they, gung-ho on trying to really get in that top of the draft and get a top?
I think it depends on who's available.
And, yeah, for sure. And or, could we see them maybe try to package and, get an established guy who's already, playing and has shown some sort of success in the league so far, which is something that we've been talking about kind of last couple weeks. We know we've mentioned Alex DeBrincat. Is there somebody else out there who may be in cap trouble or something along those lines? But you have a lot of draft capital to work with. So it's going to depend on, and we don't know Barry Trotz as a GM yet. We know him as a coach. We don't know him as a GM. And I think that this draft is going to show a lot of how he's going to want to, you know, I guess, you know, set the precedent of how he's going to be a GM here for the next couple of years, however long he is here, you know?
Yeah, I think that would, you know, I think that's going to be the big question for everybody, of what, you know, what's he going to do to fix this roster? I do think that there's a move that I would say he's probably going to make that we don't see coming yet. I just feel like that's whether it's going to take a step back a little bit, but to take several steps forward, because he's made it pretty clear what he's after, and that is finding that game-changing centerman, which could be available in this draft. And again, that's not something, you know, unless you're picking, you know, top three, that's not really something that's going to help you today. It's going to be more for the future when it comes to the NHL. And so I think it would be, you know, can he find that, you know, moving forward and be able to develop. You know, I was on Fox 17 last night and said, I think they're going to be looking for defense too. You know, that's a position that they're not as deep at as they have been in the past. And so, you know, obviously you have Roman Josi, but finding, you know, a defenseman that they can develop, or a couple of defensemen that they can develop. So I think they're going to be all over the place when it comes to the talent that they're going to be acquiring. They have 13 draft picks. And so, like you said, they can package some of that to try and move up. And I believe they, you know, if there's a player that they covet that could be in the, you know, they're at 15, so that could be, you know, in the 9 or 10 range that they can move up and go get, then I think they'll do it.
Well, and I remember this one quote from Barry Trotz, and I think it was the day that he got announced as the GM, and he said, you know, I want us to take big swings on guys. And I really like that. I liked when he said that. I want us to take big swings on guys, which means, you know, they want to make these big moves, because if they work out, you know, we've seen how you can be so successful in the league if you really, you know, have a big swing. He says, I can find guys, you know, on the third and the fourth line. I can find guys to plug and play. But I want our scouts and people to be taking big swings on these guys in the draft. And I think, you know, if you're a Predators fan, you got to be excited, because they're all in. And I think that this could be a very exciting draft, just for the fans, not only being here in Nashville, but it's the start of a new era for the Nashville Predators.
No doubt about it. We will continue to talk about that as we lead up to the draft, and also tell you about our draft coverage that we will have from Bridgestone Arena. But coming up next, the Nashville Super Speedway will host the NASCAR Cup Series this weekend, Ally 400 weekend. And a guy that's done some winning at the Nashville Super Speedway in the Truck Series, Ryan Preece, going to join us coming up next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezvik, Nick Kieser with you. Ally 400 coming up this weekend at the Nashville Super Speedway. It all starts Friday night with the Craftsman Truck Series race. The Rackley Roofing 200, the Tennessee Lottery 250 Xfinity race on Saturday, and of course the Ally 400 Under the Lights on Sunday. One of the participants in that race will be Ryan Preece, driver of the number 41 for Stuart Haas Racing. Ryan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, you've had quite a bit of luck at the Nashville Super Speedway over the last few years in the Truck Series, but I think what I understand is you're just going to be focusing on that 41 car and getting it done Sunday night.
Yeah, so we've actually gone undefeated in the Truck Series races. We've won the last 2 years, and you know, moving into the Cup Series this year full time, I wanted to put my focus in that car and trying to keep it perfect. So it's something that, you know, I will say this, I love coming to Nashville and that whole area, you know, going down Broadway. Actually, I'm going to be at Roberts Western World from 4 to 6:30 on Thursday. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And yeah, definitely excited and eager to get back there this weekend.
So it's funny, because if I understand it correctly, that was like your first two truck races in your career, right? You're undefeated, as you said.
Yeah, it was just something that, you know, my crew chief and I and our team, my first truck race ever was at Nashville, and we went out and we won that race, and then we came back the next year and did it again. So, you know, having speed like that and having good days like that don't come very often, but when you do get them, I have two really, really neat guitars from that race. So definitely enjoy coming and racing there.
So I emceed an event a few months ago at the track, and Ben Rhodes was there, and I you know, the personality that Ben has, so I knew he'd roll with it. And I said, so have you guys talked to Priest about not running the truck race so the regulars have a shot at it? And he kind of laughed and said, yeah, I kind of hope he doesn't run.
Yeah, no, we just we hit on something there, to be honest with you, and it's worked out ever since. And you know, now they can honestly say they're going to have a first-time truck Nashville winner. So, yeah, no, definitely just focusing on the Cup car this weekend. We have Morton Buildings on it, and I know we're going to have a lot of guests that are hoping we can bring that Ford Mustang to victory lane.
Talking to Ryan Priest, driver of the number 41 for Stewart Haas Racing in the NASCAR Cup Series. So you are back full-time in the Cup Series. What has it been like, even though you had the year of working with Stewart Haas as the relief driver and helping with the sim and all that, but what has it been like being back in the race car full-time?
Yeah, so the weekly grind of trying to figure out where you want to be with all the setup stuff, and you know, it's nice working with the same group every single week, because last year I was working with all different teams all the time. So having Chad Johnson as my crew chief and working within our team to constantly be better, and I think it's shown, you know, over the past, I would say, 4 to 6 weeks, we've had steady progress and definitely, you know, been trending in the right direction. We've had weeks where we've been really fast. We've gotten a pole. We've led laps, and now it's just trying to put it all together. And we've been working towards doing that.
Yeah, absolutely, you have, and you've kind of seen that with Stewart Haas, the organization as a whole. What's kind of been your take on year two of the next gen car and all the development that's gone into that?
Yeah, so the 15-inch wide tires, there's so much with this next-gen car that I grew up racing. You know, the wide tires and how they really drive is extremely similar to what I'm used to doing. So that's been nice. But at the same time, there are challenges just because we don't have practice every week. You don't have testing. So it's just been a process of elimination for setup. Trying setup items to find what I like and what I don't like, and you know, I definitely feel like we're trending in the right direction, and that's what's important. So just, you know, for somebody like myself, where I grew up grinding it out at your weekly your weekly race tracks and you know, just those things that it takes to get there, I definitely appreciate Stewart Haas Racing and everything that they give me as a driver to work within my team and to constantly keep getting better.
I've always thought that this was cool, but you know, you race a lot of different things. Tony Stewart, your boss, obviously will race anything with a steering wheel on it. So what's it like, you know, having him, you know, as a boss, as somebody you can lean on and that can kind of help you through things?
Yeah, so he's somebody that I've idolized, you know, him. And then being Kevin Harvick's teammate, somebody that was another childhood hero, right? So those are the guys that they've been through it. They've been through it all. They've been there. So leaning on them and asking questions, it's a tool that we have as drivers that not many have.
Talking to Ryan Priest, driver of the number 41. So Nashville Super Speedway, yes, you won in the truck series. The trucks and the cup cars are different, though. So what is your take on the track itself and also this year running under the lights?
Yeah, so running under the lights is going to be very similar to what we did in the trucks, because they ran under the lights where Xfinity and the cup series didn't. That tends to give us a little bit more grip. Which is always nice with these cup cars, because they slip and slide a lot. But Nashville, it's an interesting, you know, bigger track, because it races like a short track, but at the same time, kind of like a, you know, an intermediate. So it's kind of like a hybrid, right? So you need your car to, you got to be able to get into the corner and get on the brakes and get it turned and come off the corner and get to the throttle as quick as possible. So it's a place that I've really grown to like.
So I did a ride along with Josh Williams actually in a street car, but I kind of got a different perspective, you know, the perspective that you guys get from the driver's seat. And it felt like that going into one and two is much different than going into three and four, just how they're laid out. Is that accurate? And how do you kind of adjust to that as you're going around the track?
Yeah. I mean, one and two, believe it or not, it just feels like it's a really sweeping corner, right? And then all of a sudden the wall is really far away coming off of two. And then getting into three, it feels the complete opposite. It feels like you have a ton of room. It's just you have forever to let the car drift out, but then the wall will come at you really quick. So it's definitely, they're just completely opposite. And for what your car needs to do and how you have to adapt, you need to be able to maneuver around and find grip.
Well, it's going to be a fun weekend for sure. Ryan, always enjoy the chats with you. Best of luck on Sunday nights in that 41, and we'll see you this weekend.
Yeah, thanks. And one thing I'm just going to bring back in here is I always grew up loving going and seeing NASCAR drivers doing different events before leading up to that race weekend. And I'm really excited to get over to Roberts Western World on Thursday from 4 to 6:30. It's going to be a lot of fun. So maybe I'll see you guys there.
Yeah, absolutely. We will definitely check that out and encourage people to go and say hello to Ryan and enjoy that. So thanks for bringing that up for sure.
Appreciate it.
All right. See ya. Ryan Preece, driver of the number 41 Stuart Haas Racing Ford Mustang, will be in action again 4 to 6:30 at Roberts Western World on Thursday. And then the Ally 400 coming up this weekend on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Three races. You can hear them all right here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. The truck race, the Xfinity race, and, of course, the cup race Sunday night. And it'll be my third year being the track announcer, so looking forward to that. Going to be fun.
You're the official voice.
I am. So a funny story about Ryan, the first year that I was a part of it, I'm getting ready to do this for the first time, and so I am nervous. I am just like, it's Friday night, it's the truck race, and it was on the edge of COVID, and so there were still like some different protocols. So usually at a race weekend, there's a big stage set up, and the drivers will all gather backstage, and they'll come out and wave and everything. And how they were doing it then is they lined everybody up next to their truck or car on pit road, so there was still some distancing. Well, I'm getting ready to go, and I feel somebody tap me on the shoulder, and I turn around, and it's Ryan Preece. He had walked all the way across the ball field in, you know, to the stage, and he was kind of like, hey, are we lining up, or are we next to the truck? And I'm like, man, you just walked all the way over here. I feel so bad. I'm like, yeah, you're going to be up the truck. And he's like, dang, man, maybe that's some good luck. And then he won the race. So
there you go. Hey, maybe it is some good luck or a little Nashville luck for you.
Yeah, so he's a great guy, and wish him nothing but the best. And, there will be a different winner in the truck series this year because he's not going to be running that race. So, again, Nashville Super Speedway coming up this weekend, and we'll have more of that flavor as we go along. Coming up next, we're going to spend some time on the Titans. And I know that we're going to have a lot of time to ask these questions. There will be more questions that come up. But I've come up with three questions on offense, three questions on defense, and then even a couple on special teams that, to me, are some of the biggest questions plaguing the Titans going into training camp. We'll discuss those coming up next and also get back to our question of the day of a great player that couldn't quite get over the hump to win the big one. We got several answers on that. We will get to that next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
He's, and I'm going to say this, and it's no diss to A.J. Brown. Mm-hmm. A.J. Brown's a fabulous receiver. If he would have stayed here, he would have been the best receiver the Titans ever drafted or ever had, had he finished his career here. But mark my words, when Trey Link really starts to put his foot to the pedal and he looks comfortable, you're going to forget about A.J. Brown. He's going to make you forget about A.J. Brown.
Ooh, okay.
And that's no slight. That's no slight.
If he's in fantasy lineups every week, that's a good sign.
That's no slight to A.J. Brown. It's not. But that's what you want as an organization, for that next guy to make you forget about the guy that was there.
And redefine how we remember that trade. Right now, we remember that trade as, oh, man, what were they thinking? But if he does what you're saying, it will not be remembered that way.
Again, people, listen to everything that I said, okay? Listen. Don't just cherry pick what I said. Listen to what I said. I said A.J. Brown was fabulous. Had he stayed here, he would have been the best receiver that has ever donned a Titan jersey. But I do believe, no slight to A.J. Brown and his brilliance, that Treylon Burks, if he figures this out, which I believe he will, fans will forget about A.J. Brown. No slight to A.J. But what Treylon's going to be able to do, people are not going to always harp back on, man, we shouldn't have traded A.J.
That was Derek Mason on Friday. And that leads us into our questions going in to training camp, about a five-week break before the Titans report. But an interesting one, an interesting take by Derek Mason.
Interesting,
back here chasing Michelle. Yeah. And look, he knows. He played the position. I mean, he certainly knows. I don't consider that to be a hot take by any means.
No, and I think Willie's response was perfect to it, right? Right now, there's such a sour taste in Tennessee Titans fans' mouth because of how the trade looks right now. I mean, AJ had quite literally a storybook season with the Eagles going all the way to the Super Bowl. I mean, talk about a perfect situation for him. Nobody could have predicted it would have worked out. And then on the flip side, here in Tennessee, Treylon Burks comes into camp, you know, a little bit out of shape, the asthma issues. He wasn't able to stay healthy, and the team goes on a 7-game losing streak. So I think what Derek's saying, and he laid it out there nicely, is that Treylon Burks, from what we've seen, should take that next huge jump.
Yep.
And what does that look like? I think that's the biggest question. He had about 400-ish yards last year. I mean, I look for that to double, at least. You know, when we talk about a big jump and we talk about him being that guy, you want him to be flirting with 1,000 yards. And, you know, you would hope for maybe 7 to 8 touchdowns. So when we talk about production, double it, right? He had about 400 yards. He was injured, wasn't able to stay on the field as much. You want that production to be doubled at least, and you want him to have, I would say, upwards of 70 catches.
Yeah, for sure. Now, so that's the first question that I have is, can they improve a wide receiver? What can this wide receiving core look like? And I think Treylon Burks doing what Derek thinks he's going to do would certainly help answer that question. Will they bring in DeAndre Hopkins? You know, there was a report that the visit went well in New England, but he still didn't get a contract. You know, so there are other teams that could potentially bring him in. That's going to take some time. You know, I think he has a market now, or knows what his market is, and now it's, can the Titans get that done? But for me right now, Treylon Burks is going to be the one that everybody's going to be paying attention to when it comes to wide receiver with the Titans, and if that position group can in fact get better.
100%. And right now we can talk about what will this group look like with a guy like DeAndre Hopkins? What could this team look like? What could this offense look like with DeAndre Hopkins? But the reality is he hasn't signed anywhere yet. And I think it's going to be a long time. And we need to look at what the reality is right now. The reality is DeAndre Hopkins is not on your team right now. The reality is Treylon Burks needs to be that guy and needs to double his production from year one to year two. Earlier this morning, Adam Vingan brought up the stats of Drake London in his first year with the Falcons. And I think, you know, he was also a rookie last year with the Falcons, same draft class as Treylon Burks. But, you know, when you look at his production from last year, let me pull it up really quick. I think that that's something you are looking okay, so in his first year, he had 866 yards, 72 receptions, 4 touchdowns. I mean, you're hoping that Treylon Burks surpasses that, but when you talk at when you talk about reception, 72, you want him in the 70 range. I don't think that's too much to ask for if he's going to be your number one guy. You know, 866 yards, you hope he can be a little bit higher, flirting with the 1,000 1,000 yards range and, you know, maybe 5 to 6 touchdowns instead of 4. But Derrick Henry is going to be he'll have a lot of those touchdowns. You know, Kyle Phillips, I think, will be a red zone guy. Chig will be a red zone guy. So, I mean, if he could get up to about 6, but that's what you're looking for him. I mean, he needs to – we talk about a big jump. Well, a big jump is being able to double the production and, in addition to that, be available for about 15 to 17 games.
So the other big question that I have on the offensive side of the ball, and some people might put this first, how improved – is the offensive line. They made a lot of big moves on the offensive line, and I use the term big loosely because they didn't spend a lot of money on the offensive line. They got Andre Dillard on a, you know, pretty good contract. He's been a backup in Philadelphia. He's right now penciled in to be the starting left tackle for this team. They drafted Peter Skoronski, 11th overall. Looks like he's going to be at the left guard spot. Mm-hmm. They're moving –
Aaron Brewer to center.
Thank you. Aaron Brewer over to center.
The telepathy.
It's all the – I mean, like, I'm trying to think, okay, they moved this guy and this guy and they signed this guy. And then Brunskill they brought in. It looks like he's going to be the right guard. And then the only holdover besides Brewer moving over from guard to center, would be Nicholas Petit-Frere in his second year at right tackle. And so a ton of question marks when it comes to the offensive line and the Tennessee Titans. On paper – it looks improved, but we got to see it.
Well, it looks improved from week 18 yeah. to now.
Right.
But when you look at what the offensive line looked like a year ago, I don't think it looks improved.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you look at that offensive line, it was, you had Nate Davis, Ben Jones, Taylor Lewan. You didn't know what Dylan Radins was going to be. We know how that turned out. And there's somebody, Aaron Brewer.
Well, Brewer and then Petit-Frere.
Yeah. Okay, so you had options, right? You felt more confident, though, in the offensive line and didn't realize that the drop-off would be this big. So when we're talking about it looks improved from week 18 and what they put out there the last week of the season than what it looked like at the beginning of the year. And I think that that is almost a testament, too, to see how much the team dropped off because of injuries, because of guys being unavailable, because that's what your offensive line looked like at the beginning of the year. And I do believe that these are upgrades from, you know, week 18. We mentioned Dennis Daly, which I know is going to give a lot of fans PTSD out there. He was a turntable. So,
hey, you want to go meet my quarterback?
Come on. What can this line look like together? And because they are so new, they have a new offensive line coach, and the importance of the line being able to work together and get those reps together. So I think, you know, something that you can feel confident in is you feel like you have your guys that, and you know where each one is going to play. I understand things change and they don't even have pads on yet, but I feel like there was a little bit more uncertainty last year of, can Dylan Radins play tackle? Who's Nicholas Petit-Frere? He's still a rookie. I mean, at least the guys that are out there, you've seen take snaps and you've seen, you know, actually play on Sundays, aside from Peter Skoronski, but he was a first round draft pick. And I think so far what you've seen from him, you can feel confident in him, more confident than a guy like Dylan Radins. But it still will come down to, you know, how is this new offensive line coach? How does this line work together? And do they progress as the season goes on and there's not injury or fall off at that position?
Here it is. You'll love this.
Oh,
a texter says, for the third straight year, the Titans' success next season is based on injuries. Well, if he's healthy.
Yeah. Hashtag if he's healthy. What do we start that? I mean, we had texters texting in on Robbie and Rex Road last week and saying, well, of course everybody's success is going to depend on if he's healthy. Well, we need to preface it because, Chase, what happened the last 2 years?
They
the Tennessee Titans led the league the past 2 years. If that happens a third year in a row, I mean, people are going to be irate.
Yeah. I know. Everybody's going to be wearing bubble wrap during the – during the week.
I mean, in my brain right now, I'm like, it can't happen a third year in a row, but we said this last year.
So the third question I want to spend some time on, what do we truly expect from quarterback Ryan Tannehill? Because that is going to be a question on everybody's mind going into the season. We will discuss that next to lead off hour number two. Jonathan Hutton at the bottom of the next hour as well. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.